Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, editor of PC. I'm pleased to be joined by Greg Gorniak, Senior Director of Manufacturer Operations and Data Services at AmerisourceBergen. Among multiple topics on today's agenda, he'll be discussing the details surrounding the Drug Supply Chain Security Act, including how prepared the pharma supply chain is in successfully implementing its requirements. Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today. I really do appreciate it.
Nico, thank you for having me. Wonderful to be here.
Definitely. So without further ado, let's just dive right into it. So for some of our listeners who may not be as familiar, would you mind providing a history and just an overview of DSCSA? And not only that, but could you also kind of get into what exactly members of the pharma supply chain are expected to comply with come this November?
Certainly. So the Drug Supply Chain Security Act, or DSCSA, as you'll hear us do the acronym for it, was enacted almost 10 years ago in November of 2013. But prior to the DSCSA, there were multiple state pedigree laws. So pedigree was the name they chose for there. And it was that it was different state laws of how you could move and operate pharmaceutical products throughout state lines or within their specific states. And all of them were different. So there was a California pedigree law, there was a Florida pedigree law, multiple other states. So leading up to that, the trading partners within the U.S. supply chain, so the manufacturers, the wholesalers, and the dispensers said, you know, we can't operate 50 different ways, right, with 50 different states, 50 different pedigree laws. We need a federal law. So it was presented to Congress that we need a federal law, and hence there was already the DQSA, which was the Drug Quality and Security Act, and within that, a subset of the DQSA was the birth of the DSCSA, where we then enacted this specific 10-year journey of a set of laws with four major milestones throughout this 10-year-long compliance requirement. So quickly, I'll go through those four different requirements. So then again, right before it was November in 2013 was when Congress signed it into law. And then we had 10 years from that point on to meet four specific requirements. And the first one was back in 2014, and which was the electronic data exchange method. So more about how we would exchange what we called the transaction information. So you had the transaction information, the transaction statement, and the transaction history, or what we call T3 information. So that data prior to 2014 was exchanged quote unquote electronically, but more over email, right? Excel files, Word documents, PDFs. And they said, you know what, first milestone, we're going to get rid of that and do everything fully electronically, which was the birthplace of a lot of the EDI transactions. So the electronic data interface of the EDI 856, the EDI 850s, which were things like the advanced ship notification, purchase orders, all of those things again. And they said, you know what, we can't do this via email, it needs to be done electronically, system to system through these connections. That was the first one. Again, it was granted a one-year enforcement discretion period. So it was really 2015 when that became law and people were ready to do it. Then the second milestone was the serialization requirement. And that was a huge milestone for DSCSA. And this was really on the manufacturers. So that was when you look at this whole landscape, and it was the manufacturers who produced those pharmaceutical products had to, at the time of production on their production lines, were on each individual unit. So whether it be the carton, the bottle, what have you, they would imprint four product identifiers in a human readable format. And those four PI were the GTIN, which is the global trade item number, basically the NDC, the National Drug Code. It was the identification number for the code of the drug. It was the lot number, the expiration date, and then a unique serial number. And this was the first time this has been done. This was a unique serial number for every single unit of product that was produced. So not only was that produced in a human readable format on a bottle or a carton, but that there was also a 2D data matrix or a 2D barcode imprinted on that bottle next to the human readable information that can be scanned with a 2D scanner and read. It was that same four product identifiers in that 2D barcode. So all of that was the first step. Again, that was 2017. Was also granted a one-year enforcement discretion period as manufacturers were ramping up, but they weren't ready to meet 2017. So it was November of 2018. The third milestone was then called the saleable returns piece. And this was where we talked about 2-3% of the product that is sold from wholesalers down to the dispensers get returned to wholesalers. Now, whether that be because they just had extra stock sitting on their shelf that they knew they weren't going to use, but still had good dating available. It wasn't expired yet. Whether they fat fingered in an order, they ordered 100 and they meant to order 10. Oops, I need to send you back 90. This was good product coming back to the wholesaler that we could then sell off again to another distributor or a dispenser that needs it and get it to a patient that needs that product. But when we look at that, we said there's a lot of hands touching these products as they move. So part of the DSCSA was when that product comes back into the distributor's hands, we need to validate that this is still authentic product, that it's not counterfeit, that it hasn't been altered in any way. So we started taking the data from the serialization milestone that the manufacturers were now producing, and not just keeping the data at the manufacturer, but putting it into what was, this was the birthplace of the VRS, which is the verification router service. So we were putting this manufacturer data into a VRS repository that all of the trading partners had accessed into, so that when we scanned the barcode on every individual product coming back into our DC, our distribution center, it would actually route that message to the VRS to validate the 4PI and then give you a true or false, whether that matched. So we said, yeah, this is actually authentic product from the original manufacturer. It's not counterfeit. We can sell this on to another dispenser and get it to a patient that needs it. And they can be confident that it is authentic product, that it's not counterfeit. Now, the big piece of that too, I said 2-3% is returns. Doesn't sound like a lot, but 2% of returns makes up over 60 million units that are returned in the US supply chain every year. So again, one of AmerisourceBergen's mid to large distribution centers can receive anywhere from 4,000 to 10,000 returns a day. So we have to process all of these and make sure that we want to make sure these are authentic products, that they're not counterfeit. That was the third milestone of the DSCSA. So this is a lengthy discussion on how it was all planned out over 10 years. And again, that was granted a one-year enforcement discretion period as well. So it went to 2020 and then COVID hit, pandemic slowed some things down. It was then granted an enforcement discretion period until 2023, which is now the fourth and final milestone of the DSCSA. And this is the track and trace model. So this is where now not only are the manufacturers creating that serialized data for every individual product they create, they're now sharing it. So all the authorized trading partners, or you'll hear me say ATPs, authorized trading partners. So think about the main three ATPs in this network would be the manufacturer, the wholesaler, which is me at AmerisourceBergen, as well as some others, and the dispensers. So we were now going to be sharing the serialized data for every transaction that we do. So every time we purchase product, we not only now have to receive the product, but the data itself, because without the data, I'm not legally going to be able to touch the product. So now data is just as important as the product, which has never happened before, right? This is a huge step, but it's also helping us. This is the full model of how we're going to secure the supply chain. And that really was the process of the DSCSA over the last 9.5 years, right? We have 5.5 months left until November of 2023.
Thank you for that clear and specific breakdown there, Greg. I think people are really going to appreciate that kind of that timeline to see how it's really developed over the past decade or so. And now keeping that in mind, obviously you mentioned we're really coming up on that about 5 months away from that end of November 2023 deadline. So from what you've seen along this pharma supply chain, what are these members' mindsets in terms of really being prepared for its implementation? How has been that feedback?
It's been interesting, to say the least. It's been a lot of education. So there's multiple industry work groups that are involved in this whole space, right? Because a lot of it has to be you reading and understanding and translating the legalese of the DSCSA first. So understanding what that means, taking it back to your own companies. So like taking it back to AmerisourceBergen and figuring out, okay, this is what it says. What do we have to do in terms of there's manufacturer requirements, there's a set of dispenser requirements, and there's a set of wholesaler requirements. All those are a bit different. So understanding that piece first, and then understanding how do we do this interoperably. So that's the key term that we've been using for the last 10 years, is all of us have to play in the same sandbox. So how do we make all of this interoperable, where in the past, you wouldn't share data, right? That was private. You didn't want anybody to see anything. Even if it's not really like PII or anything that was really specific, you still didn't want to share data with somebody else that was outside of your four walls. So how do we all do this together? And also, how do we follow a set of standards that makes this interoperable? And that was a lot of the hard part, right? And then trying to figure out, okay, we can make it interoperable. So we use GS1 as our global standards company, that we all follow that. So that one makes us interoperable so that we all can play together. We play nicely together. But then you say, okay, how do we do this? And I think that's where your question was alluding to, is that you have multiple sizes, shapes, not only around the differences between a manufacturer, a wholesaler, and a dispenser, but you're talking every one of those three trading partners can be of every different shape and size. Super large manufacturers, super small biopharm manufacturers who make one product. Somebody else who's a large one makes 1,000 products. Same with the wholesalers. You have the big three, and then we have smaller, you have medium size and smaller size wholesalers. Same things down to the dispenser level. You have large retail chains, right, that have thousands upon thousands of pharmacies throughout the country. And then you also have your independent local pharmacies, right, which are wonderful. They're your mom and pop pharmacies, we call them, right, that are on your corner store. You know the owner, and the owner does everything. They're the pharmacist, they're the owner, they restock, they take out the trash. So the message is always the same, that we have to meet this requirement, but then how you do it is a little different every time, because it depends on who you're speaking to. But the level of oomph and push and how people are getting ready to do this has been across the board. We've heard and seen it all.
There's been organizations on record that are heavily involved. I know I was at the HTA's distribution management conference, and they've put out, you know, they've made their sentiments very strong. They've been one of the people that have said, listen, perhaps FDA should allow more time before enforcement actions are taken and things of that nature. What is your stance on that? Do you think that is necessary to help facilitate this process and to ultimately facilitate this implementation?
Yeah, I do. I was on stage at that HDA distribution management conference, and I think we spoke to this as well. So AmerisourceBergen, myself and my boss, Matt Sample, we've talked about this a lot with HDA within the work group about this phased approach, we call it, or a soft launch, where as of now, the DSCSA is kind of a big bang approach, flip the switch November 27th, everybody goes live and there we go. And the problem that we're seeing is that, you know, folks are making the right steps. We're getting there, but we're running out of runway and we're not seeing as much data as we should be. So what do we do come November when we don't have the data? If we go big bang approach, if I don't have data November 28th, I can't move the product. So that's not good. So how do we do this? And that's where the phased approach came in, where it's like you have, like I touched on earlier, three main authorized trading partners: manufacturers, wholesalers, dispensers. So who's first? Well, the first person in this whole race is the manufacturer. They produce the product. They also produce the data. We can't do anything without them. I actually joked before, I actually have a slide in one of my industry presentations. So like I said, my boss is Matt Sample. I call it the sample example, and he hates when I say this, but I liked coining that term. But he says, think of it, this whole thing visually as a relay race in track and field. So the first runner is the manufacturer. They're holding the baton. The baton has the physical product as well as the data in it. Then they produce it. They start the race. We as wholesalers are the second runner. We're standing there with our hand out waiting for the baton being the product and the data. So then they come, they hand it to us. Then we run the race and give it to the dispenser. And then the final, the anchor leg is the patient who ultimately receives the product safely. So you think about it that way and you go, okay, well, if I don't have the first runner in my relay race, what do you want me to do? So it doesn't matter about having this big brand like approach or the deadline is November 27th. If I don't have the first runner, I can't run. The dispenser can't run. So the phased approach is saying, let's give the first runner, the manufacturer, a set of extra time to get ready, right? We already have steps today that are securing the supply chain, right? We're using EDI. We have electronic data transactions, right? We're scanning barcodes. We're checking data. So we are already doing some models or steps today to make sure that we're safe. So track and trace is the next level of that. But we're saying, let us continue to do this model today. Let the manufacturers go live in November, but continue to ramp up to the new method. And you'll hear me say EPCIS. EPCIS is the new data messaging standard that's taking over for EDI as the DSCSA compliant transaction. So let them operate in two modes where they continue to use EDI, but then also ramp up EPCIS, and we'll do both. And you'll see it start to switch, whereas EPCIS will start to take over. And when that hits a certain stance, let's say we get 6 more months. So then come June 2024, we then change our mode to where now we focus on the wholesalers. So the wholesalers now have had some extra time to now say, well, I'm getting almost 100% or I'm getting 100% of data from my manufacturers. I can now take that data and share it with the third runner, who's the dispenser, right? But I can't do that without the first one. So the phased approach allows extra time for the manufacturers to get ready to stabilize the network, stabilize the data, and then move it to the next partner, which is the wholesaler. And then, you know, 6 months to a year later, we do that, stabilize the wholesaler piece, and then finally go on to the dispenser piece after 2024.
Certainly some food for thought there. Really plays on the whole Rome wasn't built in a day thing. This is exactly. This cannot be an overnight process. And so you started to get into this track and trace process, Greg. So knowing what you know now, how do you see this technology really taking off, say, in the next decade? How do you really see it shaping out as we look ahead here?
When we were ramping up for 2019 for saleable returns and blockchain was a big technological advancement. Hey, look at the blockchain, everybody, there's nodes, it's immutable, the data doesn't get erased, it's stored, it's shared. That was really where the VRS started as well. So when we talked about being able to interoperably authenticate data, so it wasn't necessarily that the suppliers or the manufacturers were sharing the data, they were publishing it to a VRS network, which was it's a blockchain node, for lack of a better term. And then you had another piece of a blockchain lookup directory to manage and orchestrate requests going back and forth. So you had that. And then you look at, in general, now that we're exchanging that data versus sending it to a repository, we're exchanging it. And you have this EPCIS file with all this serialized data. And like I said earlier on, right, it's amazing. Every single product, we can track where it's been, where it's gone, where it's gone. You can go backwards and trace it back up through the network. But we know it's not even like lot numbers where you're saying, oh, there was a lot that had 50,000 units, but it was split up and let's say 200 hospital systems all got that lot. We can now say, no, I know that lot was split up, yes, to those same 50 hospitals, but I know exactly the serial numbers where you got 10, you got 100, you got 1,000, and I know exactly which 1,000 you got. So you know all this serialized data can just take it's going leaps and bounds above where we've ever been to be able to to be able to do pinpointed recalls. So in the case of a recall, we're not just doing the lot and sending a blast message out, which yes, we'll still do, but now we'll be able to pinpoint exactly who did we sell that lot and those serial numbers to. So I can physically call, hey, Nico, I know you received a serial number that was in the lot recall, not just like I'm sending it to everybody to say, hey, if you have that lot, go find it. So a lot of good can happen here in terms of those spaces where that serialized data can really just take us to another level. I mean, I even look at, again, Greg's opinion, where what we can use with this too is similar to the European model. So the European model in the Falsified Medicines Directive, so the EU FMD, they call it, is a point of dispense, POTA. So they verify the product. The pharmacist actually verifies it as they're distributing it to the patient. So that same stance can be done here in a future realm where you scan at dispense and you have the serial number. So now you can track these serial numbers as being dispensed or used, whatever you want to say, right? We're doing that model. So these were used, right? They gave it. In your electronic medical records, you can say, hey, well, I know you can tie that serial number to a patient in your EMR. Wonderful. Why not? Why would we not want to do that? You know, we're not doing that today, but it's not a far off stance. Everything's data. It's all connected. The systems just have to talk. You look at reverse logistics where we send things back for destruction. So it's not only that I sent 100 bottles of something to a reverse distributor who's going to destroy it, and we hope they get destroyed, or that they sent me an Excel file of a couple of units that they destroyed. They can now scan, similar to what we do. You scan the serial number, build a file, send me back the file of serial numbers that say, I destroyed these 50. Here's the serial numbers. I can get a message electronically. A lot better than somebody typing it in, right? So use these systems and this data to its fullest potential.
It is incredible. It's exciting, scary, but most of all, I mean, probably a positive thing just to see how it's going to really develop over these next few years. So I thank you, Greg, for taking the time to kind of share your knowledge with the listeners and really spread the word. I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on today. It means a lot.
Anytime. Yeah. Like I said, appreciate you inviting me here. It was wonderful to be on your show. And if you need anything else in the future, let me know.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.